So, just sitting here and wondering when I would be ready to give the talk. could be here a while. And reflecting, isn't this, you know, so often our predicament in retreat, in meditation, in our life, where somehow a sense of some way we would like to be, or we would like things to be, and the sense of, oh, not quite like that. There's a gap. Imperfection. And we don't like that. So maybe that's one way of understanding dukkha, the great noble truth of suffering, stress, of this sense of so often our experience of things not being the way they should be. And sometimes we're not even conscious of it. It can be so, so subtle. And what I'd like to speak about this evening is something which I think is I understand it as a kind of a response to that. Things being kind of this sort of uncertain and not quite right, and so we look for something to blame or someone to blame. And sometimes that someone is ourselves. And so that's what I'd like to speak about this evening. Feels like it's following on a bit from the hindrance talk from last night. This psychological pattern or mental pattern, maybe that we all know in ourselves to some degree, although I think some people are blessedly free of it. And if that's the case for you, if this inner critic, this blaming voice that sort of like the energy of aversion that sort of gets directed towards, you know, your own being, if you're relatively free of that, then maybe this talk can help you in perhaps understanding and having compassion for those of us in whom it is rather active. And sometimes I think, you know, maybe you know friends and family, colleagues, clients, you know, where sometimes these things we can hear and see and other people that we're not necessarily so aware of in ourselves. And to be able to recognize that, to have compassion, to be able to sort of creatively engage, constructively engage with this in ourselves and others, it seems like it's so common. And that's a whole other thing, perhaps, to look at why that is, why it is so common. And perhaps on a retreat, if this pattern is, you know, kind of fairly common one, it's a prime situation for it to get going and to be quite activated, because we don't have our usual, you know, friendly chats and various sorts of activities that distract us from the aggression our own minds are inflicting on us some of the time, a lot of the time. And I think for some of us, for some people, this sense of inner criticism, or it's also called the inner tyrant. Now, that kind of can feel like that, something that's driving you, you know, never good enough, never good enough. Also called the judge. So that it's something that can absolutely undermine our meditation. You know, it can convert our good intentions into a kind of, you know, measuring stick to beat ourselves with. Wow. So, yeah, let's see. I thought I would share, there's a couple of books that I would recommend, or put them on the board towards the end of the retreat. One is this came out last year, which has sort of inspired me to revisit this topic. And he called his Mark Coleman's book was called Making Peace with Your Mind. And he talked about this having been a very, very strong quality in his life. And so at some point he got really interested to see, yeah, how to work with it. So see if any of you recognize some of this in yourself or others. I saw how punishing I was with myself. I understood how cruel and savagely unforgiving I was about my own foibles and insecurities. I discovered how judgmental I was about everything I did. And whenever I tried to do anything new, I felt the unreasonable expectation to be perfect from the outset. So I don't know why I'm smiling, really. It's just, it's horrible. I guess I recognize it. And I recognize it in myself and I recognize it in others. And it's almost like when you spell it out like that, it sounds kind of ludicrous. You know, like, what? Really? I mean, sort of logically, you know, it's just highly questionable, but really? But possibly not in the realm of logic here. So yeah, a habit of finding fault with oneself. You know, this sense that I sometimes think it's maybe a manifestation of, you know, that Velcro for the unpleasant and Teflon for the positive, you know, that about ourselves, about others, about life, about anything, you know. Oh yeah, you know, there's some good qualities here, yeah, but they're not very, you know, I'm really greedy and I can sometimes be, you know, so careless and, all right, Velcro for the negative. No, so this is, I think, one of the awful effects of this. When it's very strong and pervasive, it can steal away all the goodness and the joy and the enjoyment. Now you can't enjoy life. You've got to sort something out and get better and improve yourself. You know, no time to enjoy yourself. No time to, you know, feel joy in life. You know, there's too much that's wrong. Oh my goodness, it's so cruel and so driving and so not seeing the whole picture of who we are. You know, not honoring and valuing and celebrating the goodness. And I think that sometimes, yeah, that's this such a this sort of coming home to this simpler, you know, what Paul was saying about just being okay. Just okay, just content, at ease. And how much there's a simple enjoyment of life and just being. And then this, the part of the way the hindrances manifest, I think they're just, it's something so starts activating, proliferating, you know, thoughts, activities, complexities about ourselves and about others. And this pattern is a really, really prime example of that. So I want to say a bit more about recognizing this and then a little bit about how to work with it. So let's see. I sometimes liken preparing a talk like chasing peas around a plate. So I have been chasing peas around, but I will probably continue to chase peas around the plate with you. So I hope you will be patient. One of the ways the inner critic manifests for me is to constantly apologize for everything I do. So sorry. If it's like, you know, anybody else? Like, recently in teaching, I think 1 week this got really bad, and 3 yogis came to me and said, please stop doing that. Please stop apologizing. I'm like, Okay, thank you very much. Good feedback. Sorry. Oh, oops. No. So it's good, you know, if you take it in the right spirit, to be able to have others, you know, support you. And one of them said, "For goodness' sake, stop doing that." You know. So right. Okay. And I think, you know, for me, maybe this isn't the case for you, but this feels to some level the work of a lifetime. And this sort of shifting the inner culture, which is for me so strongly marked by, you know, criticism and harshness and all of that. And yet at the same time, I think it can be the shift of a moment. So, I think that's so interesting, you know, that yes, there's this kind of gradual and sudden, you know, kind of wisdom in practice, and that we in a way, it's like both and, isn't it? That yes, there's a lot of work to be done, and we are okay as we are. Really? Surely not. You might be, not me. So this may be part of the intention of the talk, is like I can talk about maybe different ways of working with this, investigating what helps, and that can be, and in some ways maybe has to be, an ongoing kind of process of cultivation of good intention towards ourselves and others. You know, then gradually that replaces all this sort of attacking and blaming and fault finding, you know, whether it's, kind of lost the thread of where that was going. Right, maybe I'll just, before I go on to that, I also wanted to read you another book which I'll put on the board for those of you who might wish to follow this up. Let's see. There was some more quotations. Oh yeah, hang on. So from Ajahn Sucitto, who's one of my most beloved teachers, a book called Unseating the Inner Tyrant. And maybe tyrant is another way of naming this nagging voice that demands you achieve perfection. Feeling inadequate and trying to prove ourselves. Now this is an interesting one to really look at in meditation. It's like that sense of inadequate, somehow I can't quite, you know, I'm not really up to this and can't quite. And so, you know, you push, you try to prove to yourself, to the teacher, yes, I really can. See, look, I can do this. So that's almost like, yeah, a kind of, what do you call that? Overcompensation. Where there's a kind of inner sense of, yeah, but oh my God, if they really knew how hopeless I was at this, you know, it was, they would, you know, throw me out. And so then the persona, the sort of surface, I've got to look like a really good meditator. I'm walking around very mindfully. Eating my spoon of food very mindfully. See? Can you see? See? Whereas inside, you know, like, whoa! You know, it's like, I hate everybody! And all this really, really kind of, you know, stuff that you don't want anybody to know about. And there's something about this inner critic that's saying you shouldn't be like that, you shouldn't, you know, there shouldn't be anger, there shouldn't be imperfection, and all of that is exaggerated and blown up and, you know, made into this awful, awful, awful thing that you have to hide, if you possibly can, but you probably can't. But anyway, you know, try. So I want to share, well, I mean, we were talking about this at lunchtime, so maybe I'll share. Maybe you can join in a bit with this. We were designing Inner Critic t-shirts. So mine was, I'm sorry. And Paul's, is that okay? I'm not sure. And Sampo's, I'll regret this later. Yeah, so you might write your own, you know. And the other side of the inner critic is you, right? The voice in your head that says you are not good enough. So I want to share some absolutely appalling drawing that I made. You won't be able to really see it, but anyway, when I was exploring this a year ago, and I thought, it's so good, I'll share it with you. It's actually so bad. But anyway, it's good in one way and bad in another. Anyway, so here's my little kind of exploration of the inner critic, and I'll just point some things out to you. And in the service of exposing this, you know, so often in the Buddha's teachings, there's these moments where Mara, the trickster figure, the devil, the tempter, the one who's trying to undermine him, even on the eve of his enlightenment, saying, who do you think you are? So this is the inner critic. So I feel like some version of this was around for the Buddha, for others at the Buddha's time. You know, it's there. You can see it in the text. This may be a different form for us. You know, and one of the things he would say is, I know you, Mara. I know you, Mara. I know you. We recognize. So perhaps drawing and writing, they would probably look different for you. This is a little creature with really, really, like, big eyes, big mouth, huge ears that are collecting evidence from everywhere of our unworthiness. Absolutely, you know, all the time. And these eyes, with big glasses on them that have written on the front of them, wrong. So everything is seen as wrong. So I look at myself, wrong, others, wrong. And the mouth, this big mouth, and it's spewing out horrible things like, you are a failure, you always get it wrong. You'd be better off dead. Now, I hope your inner critic is not as vicious as that, but I have experienced that. I think, you know, it's actually saying that out loud. It's like, I think it's better than it used to be. It's like, I'm not, it doesn't get that vicious anymore. So that is, I'll take that as progress. Just try harder. Oh my God. And, you know, another thing to acknowledge, I think, which is helpful, is that this is not, to some degree, it's not us, it's not me, it's not mine, it's all come from somewhere else. Maybe you know, like I know where some of this comes from, particular people, situations. And then, of course, it's what we do with it, and then somehow that embeds as a pattern and a habit. But because it's not innate, it's not inborn, it's not inevitable, it can change, it can be released, it can fade, it can be seen as not being inherently who we are. And that is, you know, one of the key teachings about any kind of hindrance. It's like, ah. Oh. Like, right now, you could check out, can you, like, touch some sense of yourself as being a kind of openness, if you like. Like, you know, you could say that's what you are right now. And the thoughts, the feelings, the judgments, all these psychological patterns are just that. I mean, it's extraordinary, really, when you think how imprisoned and how convinced we are by this stuff. And then, sorry, I can't do that with my left hand. Just try harder. Oh, I did it, I did it. I did it. Oh. How imprisoned we can be in this stuff. It's what is it? It's nothing. It's like that. So if you get a sense of that right now, that's the sudden enlightenment. You know, that's the, oh. There's nothing really there, you know. And then, of course, another moment, it's very there. Something's very happening. It's like, you know, so we're not trying to pretend that things don't exist and happen and arise. But then maybe when they do arise, and I certainly think I can see this is what's happened for me, whereas before it would go into real depression and real self-hatred. Now it's more just like, oh, God, you know. There it is again, and it feels uncomfortable and unpleasant, but actually, do you see, it's like there's a kind of, because I've seen it, I have seen it as just, then even when it does arise, I'm not as taken in. I know you, Mara. I know you, Mara. And the other side of it, yeah, this, so the you are and the I am, there's a kind of codependent. You might look in yourself and see, so often I can feel these two kind of shapes or forms of self arise when this gets activated. One is really heavy duty, like big boots. They're big boots down here. Say, you know, sort of dictatorial, tyrannical, controlling, so on. Kind of, and then there's this little figure in the middle who's like, ah, you know, sort of that feeling of being a victim of one's own mind. So painful. And a sense of collapsing in the face of the attack. So I don't know if all that sounds a bit too melodramatic for you, but I sometimes feel that my journey is from drama to dharma. So still work in progress. So perhaps from all of that you might recognize, you know, some of that in yourself at times. It can be, you know, or in others, it can be so subtle. You know, maybe there's just sort of pervasive, kind of niggly, you know. And again, in the meditation centers, we can sort of become more aware of that sense of not really quite being up to this, or, you know, just however you see that, or of that negativity bias in the mind, you know, of, you know, yeah, there's this, but that's much, you know, that negative part is much bigger. Let's see. So knowing, naming, I know you, Mara. And one of the most, you know, again, this kind of the simplicity part of working with this of what you can think of as just uninvolved, non-reactive listening, or, you know, hearing that voice and not being seduced, not being taken in, not believing it. It's like, oh yeah, I'm not good enough. Oh, again, right, and I've done that wrong. Oh, really? Oh, okay. No, just this. Then there's a mindfulness of it. We're aware of it as a voice rather than something in the background, like as a view or as a, yeah, as a view that we're not really seeing. So being able to spell it out. Being able to listen in a kind, compassionate way. So this is then maybe the second key kind of force that shifts this, a force of metta, of karuna, of compassion, kindness, that can gradually or in a moment replace this harshness, this tendency to criticism, this tendency, yeah, to negativity, gradually sort of replace that with so the kindness, the friendliness, and a sense of when something is difficult, are responding with care rather than punishment. And I could see this in myself. This has still not been uprooted in me. It's like just this kind of sense of for me, it's often an out-breath when something is difficult, and instead of going up into the head and me and it and I can't and it shouldn't and all of that, like just, oh, this is uncomfortable, painful, difficult, I just feel like I blew it, I said something a bit clumsy. Can you stay? And it's often for me about staying with the body, staying with something more basic about something tightened up because I didn't get it quite right. And that feeling of sadness, blew it again. And it's just that, just stay sort of that simple, stay at that level. You know, you've been off in another tirade in your sitting meditation about that story. You've probably had that tirade about 59 times already today. And can you, what is it to actually, what does this need? Like, I often, it's like this gesture of towards what hurts. What does this, like, reaching out, also being like, what does this need? Rather than slap, stupid, like, oh, dismissive, oh, fine, it's just really. Yeah, what to instead to ask, what does this need? What does this need? And it's so much often, again, the simplicity of being with kind, steady, right? What I was going on about yesterday, steady, kind, even attention, steady, even, kind, just, it's unpleasant, okay. And it's like, because it's calling you in, isn't it? It's calling you to get involved. Identify with this. I've done it many times before. Come on in. You'll know you can get busy with some real high-quality dukkha here. It's going to be great. You're going to have loads to say about yourself and other people and the story of your life and how it isn't and it shouldn't and they won't. Yay! Because we've done it so many times before, and it can feel like if I just don't do anything, if I just stay steady, isn't that condoning harm, condoning unskillfulness in myself or another? Radical non-involvement, revolutionary non-involvement, not passive but receptive, sensitive. And my sense is that when we can manage that, there is healing, there is freeing, and there is some more capacity to respond wisely. So I wanted to read you one of part of a poem which maybe points to a possible wise, compassionate response. So it's from part of a poem by Galway Knell. The bud stands for all things, even for those things that don't flower. For everything flowers from within of self-blessing. Though sometimes it is necessary to reteach a thing its loveliness, to put a hand on the brow of the flower, and to retell it in words and in touch, it is lovely until it flowers again from within of self-blessing. So beautiful. So I send out sometimes that to reteach a thing its loveliness, know, to for ourselves and others, maybe this practice of awareness of kindness, like can we to relearn the capacity to, you know, as children do, if they're not damaged and before they start getting too complicated, then they just know they're lovely in a really uncomplicated way. And they radiate loveliness and we enjoy their loveliness. And, you know, it's so sad in a way that we lose touch with that. And then as a more complicated adult, it feels like, ooh, feel my own loveliness. Ooh, big ah, ooh. But it's not, yeah, it's so interesting, isn't it? That somehow this inner critic, this judge, can be, a way or what makes us want to hide our loveliness, our brightness, just our, you know, can't you see it in other people? So I find that so, like, we see other people's loveliness often without much trouble. We just because they're alive, you're alive, you know, have a face, lovely eyes, and just there's a loveliness in a human being, I think. It's so natural. It's not constructed. It gets covered over. And so, again, sort of like with a child, it's something like going, regaining or remembering or re-entering a kind of naturalness, which again, this simple ease, contentment, just okay, where we can shine, we can enjoy life, and it doesn't have to be something constructed or something we have to pretend or something we have to persuade other people of. It's just natural. It's just natural. But inevitably, because of our life and our conditioning and our, you know, we're in the world and you have to go for interviews and wear the right clothes and say the right thing and write the right thing on the thing or you won't get the job. But then somehow that all that stuff becomes sort of who we are. Do you know what I mean? Like you never really get out of that. You sort of carrying it around. To me, the meditation in retreat and in life, we can actually let it all dissolve a little bit and be this more sort of natural human being. Let's see. What else do you want to know about this? I've got some other things I could say, like, well, I like sometimes like, okay, what would it be like if you didn't have to fix yourself? Wouldn't that be great? I don't know. I think that would be great. What if you didn't have to fix anything? Wow. It's like this, then you are free to be, to, you know, again, it's not, it's like we're still, okay, cultivate kindness and kind of, you know, wholesome intention, but that's different. It's not loaded up with this, like, I'm doing that in order to fix myself. So we drop the what I've got to do about myself part. You know, what does that leave? What remains? Like, if you start to sense into that, okay, what if there was no sort of, well, this I person, whoever that is, like, where are they? Who are they? Who is that? And this me part that has to be fixed. What if I could just gently let that aside and think, okay, how do I meet this moment? How to meet that? So much simpler. I also, you know, that this creativity, I do think is incredibly helpful to draw, paint, sculpt, dance, sing, perhaps not all here. But I was once, many, many years ago, in a wonderful art class with a wonderful art teacher for about a year. And what she had us do at the very beginning of the year was to sculpt this clay judge. So kind of personifying our, you know, inner critic, superego. So we all made this kind of little figure. And then we put it on the shelf. We each had a little shelf to put our work on. And we just put it there. And that was kind of it. So these little figures, like in the art studio, were just these. I was thinking, you know, I mean, we won't do this. If it was a different kind of retreat, we might all draw our little judge, you know, or something, and stick them on the wall. So there's something about including this awful, awful person. It's like, but, you know, it's not about banishing it and getting rid of it, is it? It's there's something, some strange wisdom about knowing. And then some of the judge is there, so we can, somehow that year, and I think it was an alchemy of other things, there was a tremendous kind of sense of freedom and free creativity, and we all did some really, really ridiculous things, which were wonderful, kind of out there and fun and liberating. And I think that, so maybe in your own way, you know, you might find a way of expressing of there. Okay, I know you, and then there it is on the shelf. It's like, so, you know, yeah, I know you, Mara. You know, in the stories of the Buddha, Mara keeps popping up every now and then throughout the Buddha's life. It's kind of interesting, you know, in different disguises, trying to kind of trip him up. So maybe that little figure up there is kind of, this no longer has the power to control our, direct our minds and our activities and our ways of being with other people. I mean, I do think one of the crucial things about this is, you know, what's it like to, oh my goodness me, isn't it painful to be with other people when you just feel so inferior? It's like, and it's such an inhibitor of intimacy and kind of enjoyment of other people. So maybe that's an incentive to work with this. What was the word you used? Incentive? To work with it. Was it a word before that? Oh, inferior. I was thinking how the inner critic, the effect of that when we're with other people is to sort of make us feel like we've got to kind of hide who we really are because we're not really that great, so they won't see. And how that then gets in the way of kind of just natural, normal, you know, ordinariness. I think this prevents us from being ordinary. I think ordinary is great. So let's see. I mean, more I could say, but actually, I feel like maybe that's enough. And I'll put these two books on the board at the end of the week if you want to come back to this. There is something about really, really trusting the simplicity of what we're cultivating here, of just keep coming back to the simple presence, you know, sight, sounds, just that awareness it's giving us the opportunity to see and understand, and it's giving us the opportunity to, find freedom from that which obscures and inhibits and sort of squashes us down. And it's much, I guess I would also sort of partly saying this to myself, it is more simple and more immediate and more here and now accessible as a shift of consciousness, a shift of view, than you can imagine. It's so close. It's so close. You can taste it. So don't do yourself the disservice of always delaying, you know, projecting your okayness into the future, because the future never comes. It's always the future. And we thus deprive ourselves of the very real possibility of this here and now, present moment. Ah, okay. Space, openness, love, freedom. So, on that note, maybe I'll close. So let's just sit quietly together for a couple of minutes.